Hi, Ken.
Hey, Saul. Thanks for taking the call. How are you doing?
Oh, sure. Hi.
You're in Philadelphia, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, I think
you're
I'm
in Lubbock.
Yeah, Lubbock.
Right?
Yeah, originally from Baltimore, but I'm in Lubbock now. I've been there a number of years at Texas Tech, and just got interested in this in-country project, and I realized there's a lot more there than
yeah, I'm aware of Texas Tech. The Vietnam archive and everything.
Right. Right. And I'm working with somebody from that, with Sean Montgomery, and they're real interested in all of this. And what's happening is Ron Milam, who's a history professor and a veteran, I think he was in infantry, has got some anthology he's doing from the sort of like Vietnam War and popular culture and collecting articles, and I'd been interested in these songs and done some then World War One songs and things along them in the English department. Well, he asked me if I would do this, and I said, yeah, I'll put something together. And then once I started digging in and had Sean digging in, and then I talked to the correspondent briefly with Lydia and realized, my goodness, there's a lot out there. There's a whole new collection of 13 CDs that you maybe you're aware of that they put out of what's his name?
Overseas.
Some of them are overseas, and some of them are the songs that were sort of associated with the Vietnam War here. I guess.
I know what you mean. I can't remember the guy's name.
Yeah.
But he told me about it.
Yeah.
He said if I write to the guy, he'll send me a set of CDs, but he never answered me. So.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, she told me I should get a hold of him too, but maybe he's besieged with that. But at any rate, I sent you
What's the guy's name? The prof who's this history prof?
Ron Milam, Milam.
Okay, so it's going to be his book then.
It's an anthology, and it's coming out, I think, in a history because it's one of the something dash Clio. So Clio makes me think it's a history, but I don't know exactly what the anthology is, I still need to talk to him. He's just kind of put this idea together, and then they're trying to get initial draft, so I think I'll get a little more time because Dick Jonas and others have said, oh, you need to talk to so-and-so, and I realize, again, as I look back on how Lydia is amazing what she's done. I mean, that's an incredible life resume. But anyway, I wanted to just sort of touch base with you because, I mean, you're part of that whole project and some of the songs that you've done.
Well, I'm glad that if I can help. I've been reading your highlights in yellow here, and if I had been more conscientious, I would have made notes, but I sort of made mental notes about what I could tell you.
Yes, okay. And let me first. I guess I'm supposed to have make the statement that I'm recording this for the Vietnam archives here.
Uh-huh.
And today's date is
23rd.
October 23rd, 2015, and I'm at my home in Lubbock, and you're in your home in Philadelphia.
Right.
They just want this so that when somebody listens to this 500 years from now, they know what we were doing. and then I asked if I could get some of your background on your service date. And I don't know whether you want to send me that or just want to go through it now.
I might as well do it now.
Okay.
I see what you outlined in your email, this afternoon's email, currently living in Philadelphia. You got that birth date and place, 21 November 1942. And I was born in Philadelphia, and unbelievably, I'm still here.
Wow, yeah.
Age and hometown when joining military. Well, let's see, 65, and I was born in 42, so that would be 23.
23, right.
It was before my birthday when I joined, I think, or just before my birthday, so I'm 22 or almost 23, I guess. I guess you could put 23. I guess it doesn't matter.
Okay.
I was living in Philadelphia at the time. I was an ROTC at Penn State.
Ah.
So I had a 2-year active duty obligation. I graduated in that May, and I had mononucleosis. So I kept putting off my date for active duty. I originally had orders for Germany, then I had orders for Korea, and then when I finally got better and went on active duty, had orders for I wound up in Fort Riley, Kansas, and went to Vietnam from there. But anyway, ROTC, I was in the Quartermaster Corps. I went in as a second lieutenant. I was at Fort Lee, Virginia for quartermaster school. Then I was at do you want, is this too much? Or you?
No, as much as you want, as much as you remember, yeah.
Fort Lee, Virginia for quartermaster school in fall 65. And then I went to Fort Riley, Kansas. And I went over to Vietnam as a quartermaster battalion.
Huh.
Not as a division.
Uh-huh.
Well, it would have been something like May 66, or may have been June, something like that. And I was a laundry and bath platoon leader.
Huh.
That was my official MOS as a second lieutenant quartermaster officer. Stronger than dirt, our motto.
Right. Oh, yes, 20, yes.
25 mostly Puerto Rican laundry specialists, 10 Vietnamese mamasans, huh. 3 portable shower points, and 4 laundry trailers.
Wow. Yeah, I bet there was. I bet that was. He had to be stronger than dirt. I'm sure there was some dirty material. Yeah. Wow.
Anyway, it turned out all I had to do as a laundry and bath platoon leader was supervisory signing papers.
Uh-huh.
You know, my extra duty of being civilian personnel officer for our supply depot became my most time-consuming job. I had to go pick up payrolls for the civilian. We had about, I don't know, several hundred Vietnamese employees in our supply depot. This was called the First, I was at Phan Rang. You want locations.
Uh-huh.
First, I was at Phan Rang. You know how to spell that?
No.
P-H-A-N.
Right.
Two words. Second word, R-A-N-G. Rang.
Okay, right. Okay.
And I was there for a while. Then I went up to Tuy Hoa, which is spelled two words, T-U-Y, uh-huh. Tango Uniform Yankee.
Right.
Second word, Hotel Oscar Alpha.
Okay.
When I was there, I became civilian personnel officer for the Tuy Hoa Sub Area Command, which was a supply service. I was in the 96th Quartermaster Battalion direct support, part of the Tuy Hoa Sub Area Command.
Okay.
I don't know whether you need all that.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
Most of my job was paying the civilian employees. I would go down to Nha Trang once a month, pick up the payroll and small Vietnamese change, put in a duffel bag, and I'd either hitchhike up at the airfield back to Tuy Hoa, or I would, when the road was open, I could take a jeep down.
So you play, it was in Vietnam, Vietnamese currency, or the wasn't there what they call it, monopoly money, the U.S. currency?
No,
or something?
No, the script was for us. The Vietnamese people couldn't get, they had no use for script.
Right. Yeah.
Vietnamese currency.
Okay.
How long was I in the military, rank at discharge? Well, I became a first lieutenant, sort of automatic, after being a second lieutenant, and I got out. I extended in Vietnam for, as I remember, 3 weeks in order to get a 3 month early out.
Okay.
So in other words, I went in, I got to Vietnam. I started my service in fall of 65. So when I was going to leave Vietnam, they said, if you stay in Vietnam and have less than 90 for a few more weeks, you'll have less than 90 days when you get back, and you can get out of the service before your 2 years are up.
Oh,
so I may be confusing you now. But
no, I understand that. Yeah,
I stayed in Vietnam an extra 2 or 3 weeks, and so when I got home from Vietnam, I was discharged
right from the service.
So that would have been June 67.
Okay.
And I was first lieutenant, and I was out of the service except for I had reserve meetings, you know.
Right.
I was off of active duty. So that...
That's a good summary, yeah. 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 And what have you done since then?
Well, most of the time I've been... I got a Ph.D. in folklore at Penn, at University of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
But I never taught because, you know, I'm a night owl. I figured they'd give me 8 o'clock classes. You know?
Well, they let me, yeah, they let me teach, teach pretty late. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, that's right. You're, yeah.
My Ph.D. dissertation was on a fella named Utah Phillips. Have you ever heard of him?
Oh, yes. And yes, I've sung that song myself. It's quite a interesting story of the sacrifice for the girl with the blanket, right? Isn't that the story? I'm thinking of Utah Carroll. I don't know who Utah Phillips is.
He died a couple years ago, but he's a songwriter, labor organizer. Hobo.
Okay.
Quite a character. You should Google him. You would enjoy reading about
him. I think I've encountered the name.
Bruce Phillips, Utah Phillips, he called himself.
Okay.
And so I traveled with him and played harmonica with him in 70 and 71 and decided to do my dissertation on him, sort of a ethnography of his storytelling.
He right.
told tall tales and such. So... I did that and got my Ph.D. Well, finally, I did my dissertation in 1982. It took me a few years. So that's one thing I did. But most of the time, I realized after playing with him that I could make a living at playing music. So I've been doing that most of my life, actually.
Right. So are you still playing these in-country songs out, or
I rarely do a whole program of them. Occasionally,
right.
when asked, but I do, I usually try to do one a set.
Uh-huh.
I do everything from folk songs to bluegrass and country music, and I usually try to do one in a set if for nothing else to sell in country CDs.
Right,
an excuse to push the CD. So I do still sing. Yeah.
And where do you play typically?
Well, nowadays I'm sort of semi-retired, and I do programs for the Humanities Councils in Pennsylvania, and mm-hmm. New Jersey, and Delaware. So I wind up playing for senior groups and historical societies and libraries.
Right.
So general audiences.
Right.
I don't travel as much. I used to travel all over the place.
Right, and you're not hauling amplifiers out of the bar at 3 in the morning or something.
Yeah, right.
And
I just got tired of hustling for gigs, you know.
So right.
Whatever comes up, I'm able to do that nowadays, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, well, that's interesting. I mean, I do some on the side, but it's definitely not... and I think anybody who's interested in this probably has some musical interest on the side of this part of it. But yeah. So what other types of music would you typically do in a gig in a show now? And you say you do one of these songs per set.
Well, I have two programs I do for the Humanities Councils. One is called American Occupational Folk Songs,
okay.
And the other's called American Regional Folk Music. So I can do anything from I might do some hobo songs and some blues and
right.
Woody Guthrie songs, you know, a little bit of everything.
And some of the Pete Seeger, I guess the industrial ballads, some of those are quite nice, you know, I really enjoy those occupational songs and interesting. I've recently got a hold of a book and had a CD. It's What's the Use of Walking if a Freight Train's Going Your Way? And
I don't know that.
Oh, I'll have to send it. It's absolutely, this is great songs of black hobos in the Depression, you know, and I ain't got no time for the train. I'm trying to make a dime, and, it's just these great lyrics and great songs.
Who is the performer?
Various. It's a compilation of various different people that have been on it, and I forget the name of the author, but yeah, and it's of that genre. I just really found it fascinating to read. And again, the collection. One of them, this first song is somebody singing about working turpentine down here in Texas, and they catch the train into Longview, Texas, or something like this, and then they do the work in the pine forest, and then there's various various songs like that about riding the trains, but it's got what's the use of walking if you...
Is this a modern performer, or is this a compilation of old recordings?
No, it's old recordings, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I know there's one for hobo. There's an old hobo song, a bunch of hobo songs compiled, but this sounds a little different.
I think this is strictly African-American and real focused on something. I don't think they've got Railroad Bill on there, but there's that type of song.
Yeah. And I'd like to know about it.
I will absolutely send it, because I think if you haven't heard it, you would enjoy it. And I can, if you can't get the CD, I could send you a copy of it, because it's fun if that's what you know, an area of interest. So you do some of these and occupational and play out. Well, were you okay? So let's go back to in country, both the physically being there.
Your outline now.
Right, I mean there's. Several questions I have, and maybe before in your background, before we get to the outline, is how did you end up? Did you play? I mean, you were playing in the evening, that kind of thing. I mean, you were always probably playing music. So how did that work out in terms of when you were there in Vietnam?
Oh well, I did a little singing among the. I had a guitar with me, and I would. Some of us in my unit, I'd get together and sing a couple songs occasionally. As far as the songs I collected over there, the songs I contributed to the In Country CD, I was told that the 48th Assault Helicopter Company was down the road, sang, drank beer and wrote songs, and I started hanging out with the 48th. Actually, that was at Phan Rang, and I was only in Phan Rang a short time. So I started hanging out with the 48th Assault Helicopter Company, and they gave me their... They were a little reticent. I was an outsider. I wasn't a pilot.
Right.
But they were... I went to several of their jam sessions, and they gave me their unit history file, which was mimeographed, their songbook,
right.
Basically. And these are all songs that they shared among fellow helicopter pilots, some of which they wrote themselves, some of which they didn't. They got from other helicopter units. And later on, I got some tapes from people. I can't remember where I got my most of my tapes, but a lot of the songs were... I'm trying to remember where I got my tapes. I got some tapes. Anyway, I learned these helicopter pilot songs, which is what I contribute. I did my master's paper in folklore on the helicopter pilot. Well, it was called GI Folklore in Vietnam, but a lot of it was had to do with the helicopter pilot songs.
Right. Okay. And so when you say these were their unit history, but were they sort of like you would learn that they had been passed down over several generations, or they were more or less crafted in country there, or not like would they be the Marines?
Country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them were from previous wars, mm-hmm. One song was written by a Captain Chris Christopherson.
Oh, yes, okay.
So when I got back to the States, I ran into the Chris Christopherson, and I said, did you write this song? And he said, well, I wrote it, I was a helicopter pilot in Germany, but he was never in Vietnam. But he says, yeah, I wrote that song, and what they did, they changed the place names and made it into a Vietnam song.
Right. Wow. Okay.
Vietnam.
And these songs. Well, I mean, you were kind of expected, I guess, if you were part of that group to know these, right? It was sort of, or was it just if you wanted to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh well, I mean, if you didn't know how to sing or weren't interested in singing, I suppose you would know them, but not to sing. You know.
Right.
But,
right.
But a lot of them sang.
Right.
They sounded like they had groups. Now I have one tape of a commander's conference. What they would do is they'd have these commander's conferences every, I don't know, 6 months, for all the commanders of Army aviation units in Vietnam. And they would meet somewhere, like the Cockpit Club in Nha Trang,
mm-hmm.
an officer's club.
Right.
And they'd have part of the the meeting would take a day or two, and in the evening they have an entertainment. They'd have a song competition.
Wow!
And these singing groups from the various units all around the country would fly in, and I have a tape of this. It's a wonderful tape, and it's hilarious. There was a great MC who told a lot of jokes, and some of them which are peculiar to Vietnam.
Right.
And all these groups got up and they had a competition, and they chose the best song of the month. Maybe it was a monthly commander's conference. And so these songs were actually used. They were in a setting like this. It was not just sung in jam sessions or sitting around your barracks. This
right.
was actually a formal setting for these songs.
Right. Okay.
I didn't write any of the songs, as you may know, on the in-country album. I used song. Well, one is called The Green T-Shirt.
Green T-Shirt, yeah, the one that opens it, right.
It's the best song in the world, but I happened to write that probably after I got back, maybe over there. I don't know, but I'm not really a songwriter. Most of the songs I contributed were songs I learned from the helicopter pilot, either from the 48th or from tapes I got later.
So songs that they were both the lyrics and the music came from somewhere else then.
Yeah, a lot of them were parodies though of older songs.
Absolutely right.
Either a lot of the groups sounded like the Kingston Trio or the Limelighters, those 60s folk groups.
Right.
A few of the groups sounded more country-ish. If they were from rural areas, they sounded more like they were singing country music. A lot of the songs were parodies.
Right, right. Yeah, the musicologists call it contrafact, I think, is the term for when you take an old tune and repurpose it. The Saigon Warrior was the Sweet Betsy from Pike, right?
Yeah.
And some of those. While I remember, because it's not on the list here, and then were there any African American songs? It seems like this is mostly a Southern rural Anglo tradition, largely, or Southern, and the folk revival. It seems like it's a mix of the folk revival of sort of New York and the South. Were there any? Do you remember any African Americans that did
among the helicopter pilots?
Or anything that you may be aware of in terms of the music coming out of the country,
out of Vietnam?
Yeah, the soldiers.
No, I don't remember any African Americans being doing any singing. No.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I don't know whether there was that many African-American helicopter pilots.
Right, right. Well,
I never attended the commander's conference, so I don't. I couldn't tell you.
Well, and I'd be curious. Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a fact that, you know, I mean, the African-American music of the time, you know, was the real soul tradition, and although you still could get a lot of groups doing that, but that would be. I mean, now I imagine in the service, there's a lot of probably military rap. I would think that'd be kind of interesting to look
and
at.
I'm sure there was some forms of music that African Americans sang or recited, or you know, some sort of artistic stuff that happened among African Americans. It just didn't get into the helicopter
right.
pilot song tradition.
Right. Well, right. I guess. Yeah. Okay. Well. So you know, looking at the. Well, when you said you performed a little bit, just kind
Hold
of.
On a second, this Greyhound is making noise. Colleen. Colleen. Danny. Sorry.
That's all right. That's a greyhound, huh? They're high-pitched, I guess, yeah.
Greyhounds aren't supposed to make noise.
Well, that's, yeah, the computers aren't supposed to crash. There's a lot of things that, once we get into that argument. Yeah.
Anyway, where were we?
I was talking about, yeah, you said you did perform a little bit, you know, just on your own over there, you said a couple sing-alongs and things like that, and like these songs, like the Saigon Warrior and things like that, that came out of from a tradition of the what was that the Lousy Lance Colonel, the original song from World War I, I guess it kind of had the same. There's a lot of those songs with that theme of the incompetence of the back page.
Yeah.
So would when you were writing these, did you sit down and write them like in your hut at night, or was it kind of like the words kind of came as a group and then somebody would write them down?
Oh, I never wrote them. What do you mean?
I mean that's true. You didn't. So, but the people who did, or the words that you got. I mean, because there's a lot of different variations on these songs. So the words that you ended up coming up with and using and singing, were they? Did you hear people and then just sort of remember them, or did you?
I guess I got them either off the tape or from the songbook It didn't have music in the songbook, but it said I may have heard the song on tape and then used the lyrics that were in the songbook. So
right.
I didn't really modify them very
at all. Yeah, and you did you
except maybe the tune I may have changed it to suit my voice or something.
Right. So and because you've got on In Country, you've got the green T-shirt, and that was one you said you wrote the.
I can't even remember when I wrote it.
right, and then the Saigon Warrior would have been in one of their songbooks then.
Yeah, and I have it on tape too.
Right, okay.
At a commander's conference.
I see. Yeah.
As sung by a Australian woman named Maggie, whom I've heard about since. I don't know too much about her, but people have heard of Maggie.
Right.
Apparently, I don't know what she did. She was a. I think she was a civilian, but I don't know exactly what she did there. She worked for some organization, Red Cross. Maybe.
Yeah, those sort of famous people, women with one name that sort of surface in folklore, right? It's kind of interesting. You did. The other song that was that Chu Yen Girls Can't You Dance the Polka, wasn't that?
You Saigon Girls.
Saigon Girls, those were also in the songbooks. It says here it was associated with it was popular with the Army Aviation Air Force and associated with the Merry Men, and the 173rd.
Yeah, I have a tape of somebody singing at the commander's conference. I can't remember.
Right.
Offhand, I have it somewhere.
Well, do you think that it seems like there was an incredible rich tradition of music in Vietnam. Do you think, first of all, was it any different? I mean, obviously you weren't in the other wars, but if you're from your study of folklore and understanding, was it a stronger, more tradition because of the folk revival and the sort of whole '60s music scene, or do you think it was pretty much the same in all the wars?
Well, gee, this is a little different.
And if you don't, I mean, I'm just asking you to speculate. But I don't know.
Well, there's all these popular songs that are sometimes associated with the Vietnam War, like we want to get out of this place, you know.
Right. The animals, right.
But this was a separate tradition. And I'm not sure if there's a parallel tradition in other wars, where there is. I notice your question about popular music in other wars, I think probably if I had to name one war that had more popular music, I suppose it would be World War II, because the recording industry was in existence.
Right.
But I'm sure there must have been pilots who wrote their own songs during World War II that I don't know about.
Right. Well, in terms of In Country, looking at the outline, would you agree that the In Country album was significant in introducing these songs to a wider audience, or beyond the soldiers and the helicopter pilots, or what were they already known?
Yeah,
beforehand?
Well, I'm sure that a lot of people hear the songs. They Vietnam vets who weren't pilots or who weren't. I'm sure they enjoyed hearing that, but as far as the general population, I don't know whether whether it was significant. I mean, we're not a household word exactly.
No. Well, that's the thing. And I didn't, you know, I wasn't aware of it until maybe 10 years ago. And I don't know how I encountered In Country. And I said, this is amazing. I mean, how have I missed this? Because I did enjoy folk music.
I think other vets know about us, other Vietnam vets.
Uh-huh.
And but when you say significant, I'm not sure how to.
Right. You know, well, or even at all. I mean, did it. I guess maybe how is In Country? I mean, does it still sell? As far as you know, you say you sell them at your shows.
Yeah. And people are interested. Just that a general public is interested, but if they have a relative that is a Vietnam vet, they'll buy it for them. And I think people find it interesting. But as far as a significant. You know, making these songs popular among the general public, I'm not sure it does.
Right. Or do you think that, well, okay, so that's going down the list here. I said, how significant was the work of General Lansdale? I mean, are you in...
Well, for me, not that significant. I didn't know about him. I don't think I knew about him when I went to Vietnam. I learned about him from Lydia,
uh-huh.
and he certainly is an inspiration as a folklorist. I appreciate his having done this... embedded himself, you know, into the tradition and learned the songs. You know, he's an inspiration, but it wasn't an influence on me, really, I don't think.
Right. And I'd in the In Country tracks...
I learned about him later from Lydia, you know.
Oh, right. Yeah, and I wasn't aware either until I started reading about her and reading about and how his goal, I guess, was to sort of use to help... people understand. I mean, it was saying you know. I think he sent copies to Kissinger, but Westmoreland or whoever.
McNamara.
McNamara. Yeah. And in Country tracks, I mean, I was saying that there was, you know, I'm making some comparison with cowboy themes on some of these.
Yeah,
let me find
that page where you're talking about that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I thought about this a little bit. How would I characterize it among the five categories you have here? I would say I always talk about these songs, these helicopter pilot songs, even though I wasn't a pilot. But
mm-hmm.
If I were a helicopter pilot, I would consider them my folk songs. And they were. They were part of one way of defining folklore, as you may know, is artistic communication in small groups. In other words,
right.
If you're a camper in a summer camp and you sing... a Beatles song,
right.
That's your folk song, even though it didn't come arise from folk roots.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And the same way, these are real folk songs of the helicopter pilots.
Right.
So I would put them in the raw category
okay. As
actual folk songs, but on the other hand, they are changed a little bit, so they're sort of a combination of raw and folk,
right?
Your first and second categories, because these guys are interpreting. There's a little bit of interpretation, but they're songs that are part of their lives,
right?
Express what they do and where their heads are at. So I would put them more leaning towards raw. I think they're the real. I think they're folk songs of helicopter pilots in the true sense.
Right.
Of course, when we sing them on the In Country album, we're interpreting them. So then they become number two. Folk.
Right.
They're not commercial.
No.
Certainly. Let's see, your fifth category, songs functioned like classical.
That's what I teach, and that's not really. I have three categories there.
Okay.
And I don't know. Do you agree? Would that be a reasonable breakdown or not? That was just something I was brainstorming.
Yeah. Well, sure. Folk. I guess they could. You could make some subcategories. I have to think about that a little.
Right.
But I look at these as my if I were a helicopter pilot, I'd look at these as my folk songs. As far as the other songs are concerned, the fighter pilots like Dick Jonas, that's...
Right, absolutely.
That's his, yeah, that's his. That's the real stuff, too.
And those songs did seem to follow, really, the sort of, and I think Dick would agree, although I'm not sure Lydia would, but they would follow, I think, the sort of the cowboy tradition, a lot of the similar, like I mentioned, the...
Some of them actually parody cowboy songs.
Right. That's like I mentioned...
There's a helicopter pilot song in one of my songbooks that's a parody on when the work's all done this fall. It's called When My Tour's All Done This Fall.
Oh, okay. Yeah, interesting.
So they actually... reference cowboy
right
song.
Right, or the Cobra 7 is like the story of the that's I think that is a Utah Carol a storyline of
yeah I think so.
He gives a sacrifices his life in front of the the stampeding cattle to save the boss save the boss's daughter, several of them of that variety.
Yeah.
And then I guess there's the commercial, you know, I'm saying something like, although Dick told me that maybe Ruby Don't Take Your Love to Town, he thought that might have been about Korea, so but that example,
I always thought of it as Vietnam, but maybe I'm wrong. It came out around the Vietnam War.
That would be a different category, or I don't know whether Sergeant Barry Sadler would be considered of the commercial.
There's something that could cross over.
Right.
Now that we have I do a parody on the Ballad of the Green Beret called The Ballad of the Green Flight Pay. In fact, that's the only one of all the helicopter pilot songs I do that is completely free of four-letter words and sexual themes. So I sing that at my my Humanities Council.
Okay, I wonder if that's on any of the any of the CDs I could get. I'm sure. If do you have it, do you have a, other than In Country, what else do you sell? Do you have a CD you sell at your concerts, at your shows?
Say it again. I'm sorry. The dog.
At your concerts, do you have CDs that you sell of your recordings other than the In Country? And
yeah, I have my own old LP that I sell CDs of.
I wonder if I can get that. I can probably get. You probably have a web page link then, that I could get it.
Well, I ran out of them.
Oh, okay.
I need to print them up. I just make up CDs myself.
Oh, okay.
I've been meaning to do that, so I could send you some cuts. Mm-hmm. You know, through Dropbox or something like that.
If you can, but let me look.
At some point, I'd rather just send you a CD.
Right.
You
know? Yeah, I'd like to get that at some point too. But there's no hurry. I have the themes that I picked out at least in country and I, you know, how do you respond to those hardships surviving? And some of these have been written, I think, in Lydia's analysis.
Okay, carefully because you didn't highlight it in yellow.
Okay, I know how that is. Yeah. I don't have to.
Did we miss anything? Oh, well, later on, there's some questions. Yeah, they're highlighted. Yeah.
Or just go down the list that you have and respond. That if you've done that, and then that's easier because I don't have the.
I'm looking at the themes of CD, so hardship, surviving. What's your question?
Oh, I mean, does that classification, those five or six, or how many, eight categories seem to...
Yeah, I'm looking at...
Anything there that seems out of kilter?
Well, there's a lot of crossover, of course.
Right, absolutely.
You know, it could be humor in daily life, and it still is talking about going home, you know.
Right.
Do we have the hero in here?
That's number Roman numeral 9. There is fighter pilots, bomber pilots, and helicopter pilots as heroes
on the next page.
Cowboy,
yeah, gotcha.
Now your pilots, they weren't flying these Jolly Greens and things, or were they? I guess I don't know.
I think they were just flying Hueys.
Yeah. Okay.
These guys.
So they were. That was. These were fighter gunships.
Well, but some of the songs that I have, the guys at 48 were shot. They did gunships too. There were all kinds of on the commander's conference tapes I have. There were all kinds of units. They were they flew all kinds of helicopters.
Yeah, that's what's sort of associated with
now,
it. Go ahead.
Would it be helpful? I don't have any. I don't even know where I can locate my copies. I know Lydia must have a copy of my songbook, or you know, or my the. I'm not sure I can lay my hands on it easily.
Yeah,
the mess here, but
the one from the, that you got from the squad. From the squad, you mean? Or,
yeah. Or my paper, my master's paper.
Oh, I bet I could get that. Yeah, you, I mean, you know, if you find it, but don't go out of the way looking. I know.
Lydia might have it digitized.
She probably she does. She told me, well, before I can go any further, I should come up there and look at. And I would I want to do that. I just don't know if for this little sort of summary piece of
yeah, that, an article
that I'm going to be that I'm going to be able to do it, but at this point, well, so here's some I think that was in yellow. Can you reflect on how these songs were rewritten? And you've kind of you've been through that. And have you written any?
I'm not a writer, so
yeah. So you haven't written.
Were they group efforts?
Well, that's the kind of thing like these songs that ended up in the songbooks. Do you think they were? I was in the Peace Corps in Kenya in the 80s, and when we were learning Swahili, we'd sometimes go home at night with a guitar and, you know, make up silly things like blue.
I bet you that happened.
Right.
I would think that it especially because these groups were put together to play at the monthly commanders conference, they would sit down and rehearse and think of ideas, throw in you know, ad lines.
Right.
Ideas. I would think that would happen, but I don't have personal experience with that.
And then one, the other thing that was in this same part, as I said, and these songs don't sound as angry as maybe
angry,
some.
Yeah, I'm looking at that.
Do you think is that a reasonable observation?
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. These were.
I mean, like you said, there's a lot of bawdiness, right? But not not necessarily.
And complaining, but they're certainly not angry to the extent that I can't think of anything that you would describe as angry.
Now, Lydia, I think, or somewhere I've read, as you know, they describe some of the later songs where they talk about napalming and you know, maybe being more harder edge. But I still don't, you know. I didn't, at least not on In Country. They're not. They're
there's one song in the songbook that I don't sing, or I'm not sure it's a whole song even, but it says, wake the town and kill the people.
Oh, yeah, right.
But I don't. I mean, it's more funny than
right.
Angry.
Satire, right, exactly. Yeah, kind of a. Now, do you still stay in touch with the other songwriters and with Lydia?
Yeah, not as much as I used to. I keep in touch with Lydia maybe several times a year by email. Dick Jonas sends me a Christmas card or an email every once in a while. I have visited. Now, you know, we used to tour with this as a group In Country. Did you know that?
Well, yes, Lydia told me that, and just, I guess after the Austin City Limits. And for how long did those tours go on?
We had a 6-week tour, a several week tour, I guess, of California. We did one in the East, and those are the longest tours we did. I think they were no more than a few weeks long, we played pretty big venues, but we were drawing veterans, but we weren't really drawing the general public. And we had an agent, a real agent.
Oh, wow.
And I think he dropped us eventually. We just weren't, you know, filling. We'd get 3,000-seat auditoriums and get 300 people. You
uh-huh.
know? So
right.
It wasn't really attracting attention among the general public. But in that sense, I kept in touch with the guys, because I'd see them every few months. If I'm visiting Texas, I might go see, I can't remember his name now.
Chip, is he here in Texas? Chip.
Yeah, well, Chip, I've kept in touch with Chip some. Toby.
You know, Toby,
I've been in once. But it's been a few years since I've talked to anybody except Lydia, actually.
Right.
Lydia and Dick, you know.
Right, right.
I'd love to, it would be great to do a where did you say?
Reunion.
A reunion. That would be really wonderful.
Well, there seems to be some interest in that.
Anniversary event.
Yeah, there's interest in that, and the folks here, the Vietnam Center folks and people I've talked to, it's just been a few weeks that I've really been working at this in earnest, but there does seem to be interest. So you know, we fly you guys out or wherever it happened.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure everybody would be interested or still around.
Right.
I don't know. I haven't heard from Bill out in California.
Rosenberg?
No, Chuck is around and reachable.
Right.
And I'm sure he'd love to do it. But Bill from First Cav.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I'm getting too old to remember the name.
let's see, one of them was a Bull Durham passed, right?
He's dead.
Yeah.
And so were the two musicians who backed him up.
Right.
Were so wonderful.
Wow.
But we could get other who were not Vietnam vets, but they were great musicians.
Right.
They played on the album. Toby, I don't know whether he'd be interested in doing it. I think Chip would, and Chuck would, and Dick would, certainly.
Right, right. Yeah, it wouldn't have to be, certainly wouldn't have to be everybody, but a group and maybe a conference. So that, I'm definitely, that's a live idea now, and just sort of popped out of our heads as we've been working on this. So, but yes, I think that'd be a fascinating, it would just be rich I would love it. But, you mentioned the getting 300 people, and I think, well, is that because, the theme is the war and there's still some anxiety about that?
It could be. This was, we're talking about 92.
Right. Or is it just because folk music just doesn't draw big crowds?
I think it's a combination.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And no big names,
Right.
Nobody knew who we were. When we did Austin City Limits, they got
Chris Christopherson, right?
Christopherson to do the to be the guest star.
Right.
Guest host.
Yeah, well, you could maybe get get somebody like Kenny Rogers involved or whoever was I don't know, but yeah, the there weren't any veterans that hit the big time, I guess, because they were serving their country. So what other from this list here, is there anything else that stands out that's highlighted in yellow that you want to talk about?
How you came to write these songs? What music did you grow up with? Would that be interesting?
Yes. Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Well, I first started realizing I could sing a little bit, I used to sing in high school doo-wop music, mainly with the black guys who were in the basketball team.
Oh, okay.
It would stay late, and I knew all the words to the doo-wop song, so we'd go in the boys' room where the acoustics were great, and I'd sing doo-wop music.
Right, wow.
That's how I started singing, and I always liked the rock and roll, but then I discovered folk music and started hanging out in the Beatnik Coffee House here in Philadelphia, playing guitar and harmonica.
What year would that have been?
That would have been 59.
Wow. Yeah. And, that's the height of it, yeah.
I graduated high school in 60.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is history.
Right. So how did the in-country CD, how did that come to, did Lydia, was she the glue that brought that?
Yeah. She knew about us all, and I had never met anyone on the CD before the recording session except for Chuck Rosenberg, because he lived in Philadelphia for a while.
Hmm.
He lives in New York now still, or part-time anyway. I think he was working for the UN. I don't know if he still is, but and so besides, when I went out to the recording session in Evanston, Illinois, I didn't know any of the musicians except Chuck, and I knew Lydia. And it was wonderful to get to know them, and the great bunch of guys. I mean, we weren't always politically in the same vein.
Yeah, I know. I imagine. Yeah, I know. Some of them some folks are fairly conservative, and some maybe more Democrat. Yeah, the union type, and so, yeah, all right. But put all that behind you, I guess. I know Dick's pretty conservative, I think, and And
yeah, I would say that. We managed to get along pretty well most of the time.
Yeah. Well, was that, and that was,
we were traveling together for like 2-3 weeks, you know, and staying in adjoining motel rooms. So.
Right.
In vans.
Yeah.
We had a fella who was our road manager. We called him the Admiral because he had been in the Navy. He would keep us in shape.
Okay. Yeah. Keep you from running off with the after parties or things like that, right? The typical rock and roll tour. So do you think that one of the questions that was, as you know, in folk tradition, especially in an oral tradition, sometimes oral literature, songs would be a repository of necessary information for a group. Now, of course, you know, we have technical manuals and things, so it wouldn't have been as important, but do you think in the helicopter pilots and learning some of the songs that there was any value in terms of their technical, maintaining their technical expertise?
I certainly learned things. But talking about their tools makes it their folk song, you know.
Right.
So that had that function, to talk about the nuts and bolts of being a helicopter pilot, but I'm not sure they were teaching these.
Right. Well, that's interesting, though. Yeah, because it does make it unique. Like you said, what was your definition of a folklore, folk song way back earlier in the interview? You said
artistic communication in small groups.
Right.
It's not my definition.
Right. I know.
It's one of my professor's definitions.
Right. Right. But that's a good. I think I have read that or heard that. But and so yeah. So in that sense,
that's about the broadest definition of what folklore is.
Right.
Artistic communication in small groups, because you can anything can be part of that.
Right. Well, that's because I do teach technical communication as well, one of the hats I wear, and so it's kind of interesting to see how.
Well, what do you think about the aviation?
It's amazing how detailed it is. But you're right. I think it wouldn't be a case of, we'll sing these songs about some of the, you know, dialing in the mills and all that, and then that'll help us learn the sequence. Like Dick didn't seem to think that. He said, we knew that from training and from manuals, but what your assertion that it would be it does cement together the group unity by sharing. And I think that's probably more accurate. But you know, when you think about in real oral days when there wouldn't have been, and this is, you know, way back prior to a written tradition, the mnemonics, anything that would help keep something in the memory would preserve it.
That relates to any of the songs that
no.
Here, but,
right?
Yeah, it's definitely. Any kind of jargon or technical talk, it makes you feel part of the in group. You know,
right?
Other people don't understand it. You know,
right. Exactly. I was saying which of the songs were sung in country in some version, and which came later. There were a few that were later, like the Boonie Rats. A reunion song.
Yeah, that.
Or not Boonie Rats, the Red River Rats, which I think was.
Yeah,
one
the one that was written by the Australian group.
Yeah.
Which was a apparently a commercial recording.
Right. So what do you think? Looking, you know, sort of wrapping up here. What do you think that the aside from keeping the folklore alive among the group, is there any merit in trying to bring these into the general folklore? Like the cowboy, you know, none of us were. Well, most of us weren't cowboys, and yet we all know Get Along Little Doggies, and is there will that ever happen with these songs, and should it, do you think?
I'm not sure it will,
mm-hmm.
Of course, not enough people know them, or maybe there needs to be a John Lomax,
right,
for Vietnam songs. maybe we just missing a John Lomax.
Right.
Maybe Lydia Fish could be the one.
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, she's.
I don't think it'll ever become as. I mean, also the fact that it's the Vietnam War and not the Great American Frontier.
Right.
Cowboys, you know, it's a different. People want to romanticize the Great American Frontier and the cowboys, you know.
Right.
I'm not sure they want to romanticize Vietnam veterans. Maybe they do. Some people do.
Right.
But I don't think it'll.
Yeah, enter the tradition in that way. Or, you know, like if you go by, you know, you've seen, like, there's the Rise Up Singing as that collection of songs. I mean, if some of these might end up in there at some point, I don't know that maybe there are some in there. I don't think there are, though.
I don't think so. And, I can't picture them being in there.
Yeah.
The people who publish, who edit Rise Up Singing would not be real prone to publishing military songs.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, and there's a certain, you know, right. I mean, I think there's maybe a little stigma. It's like, well, we'll support the veterans, but we don't want to glorify it or something, perhaps.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I think that's good. That's a good sign. Anything else that you have?
I can't think of anything, but I will reflect on it more, and if I think of anything, I'll get back to you. And if you think of anything for me, please call or write.
I will, and I'll send you a link to that book that I was mentioning, the freight train song, the hobo song. And when we get further along on this and something written, I'll certainly send you that too. So because I want to get everybody involved.
Yeah, I would be glad to comment on what you cometh. If
right.
You would like, if you come, you know, when you get something more.
No, I would. I would like that. I definitely would like it.
Maybe that will make me think of something I forgot to tell you.
Right.
Like
yeah, that's a kind of a group effort.
Yeah, and as far as your release form here, I need to probably print it out and put it in the mail some point.
Yeah, that's great. I've got I gave you my address there.
Now, Sean sent that to me, and she gave me the archive address. But
okay, send it to the archive then. Yeah, that's right. She sent you that already.
Oh, okay. Let me see.
Either place is fine. Either place is fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll get it to her if you send it here.
Okay, well, I'll see what happens. I'll decide it at the last minute.
Right. I think the postage rate's going
to
be
to Sean.
I think the postage will be the same, so either that won't be that shouldn't be a factor.
Right. Well, thank you very much for including me in your interview, and I'm glad. I hope I was helpful.
Oh, very helpful. Yeah, yeah.
And we'll talk again. I hope.
Yeah. Now, do you know how to get a hold of Chuck? Do you know where he is now? You said he might be in New York, or.
Let me see. I'd have to go to another computer.
Well, you could
I'll look that up.
Yeah, and if you have a contact, you could send it to me, if you don't mind.
Yeah, Lydia would certainly know.
Yeah, she probably will. I'll ask her.
I'll look on my other computer with my address database and see if I see anything. What do you have for him? Do you have an email address?
No, I don't have anything at this point. I haven't really tracked it down. Lydia mentioned, you should talk to him, and then we didn't. I didn't get it then, but I can certainly we'll look.
I'm sure I have something for him. It may be outdated, but I'll send that to you. And but I'm sure Lydia would know too. So one way or the other, you'll get it. I seem to remember him spending a lot of time in California now, but he may still have his apartment in New York. I'll send you what I have anyway, and hope it's not obsolete.
Good. All right. Well, thanks again. Really, very interesting, I think it's a wonderful, part of the tradition that. Well, it's good that you guys have done this, and the album is, like I said, when I first heard this, it's like, how did I miss this? You know, I mean, because all I associated was This Is the End, which is a great song, but, that's there's more to it than that. So I appreciate you.
Well, I'm glad you like it, and I'm glad you're working on it, and hope to. I've never been to Lubbock, and I'm a Buddy Holly fan, so.
Oh yeah, well we'll get we're gonna work on we're working on that. I mean, it's.
I used to go to Kerrville Folk Festival.
Okay, well Kerrville's nice, and it's a little more scenic than Lubbock. But what we lack in scenery, we make up for in enthusiasm, I guess.
Uh-huh. So. And I actually sang my Vietnam songs at this is the other side of the state, but at Weatherford, Texas.
Right.
They have a Vietnam Veterans Memorial. They're constantly fundraising and slowly building this thing. So they had me down there to for a fundraiser cocktail party to sing these songs.
Wow.
It was about, I don't know, 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, well, I know they do it. Like the Dick is doing a show for an Air Force base in San Antonio on his journey. So,
he goes a lot. He does a lot.
Does he? Yeah. So,
he goes to Japan and all these Air Force bases. You know, he's made a career of it, I think.
Well,
which is great.
Yeah. Well, you guys are talented. I mean, aside from being veterans, you're very. I mean, has the talents there. So that's what was surprising is this. No, not that it wouldn't be, wouldn't expect it, but I just was amazed at number one the authenticity combined with the production quality of the CD. I mean, it seemed like you don't always get both at the same time, and in some of these old, you know, again, I'm thinking about older 78s and things where there's like these are really authentic and their recordings rough or something, but this was just polished all the way across. So I think it's really an amazing testament that. I would hope people would get more audience, so maybe we'll see what we can do with a reunion.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks again, and you have a good weekend up there. Is the rain coming your way?
I didn't hear about it. It's beautiful today.
That's good.
It's getting to be a little chilly, but that's to be expected.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks again, and
bye-bye.
Be in touch.
Bye. Bye-bye.